A reading from the book of the Acts of the Apostles. Meanwhile, Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogue at Damascus, so that if he found any who belonged to the way, men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. Now, as he was going along and approaching Damascus, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" He asked, "Who are you, Lord?" The reply came, "I am Jesus, who you are persecuting. But get up and enter the city. You will be told what you are to do." The men who were traveling with him stood speechless because they heard the voice but saw no one. Saul got up from the ground, and though his eyes were open, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand and brought him to Damascus. For 3 days he was without sight and neither ate nor drank. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. The Lord be with you.
And also with you.
The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to John.
Glory to you.
After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together were Simon Peter, Thomas, called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples. Simon Peter said to them, "I am going fishing." They said to him, "We will go with you." They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, have you no fish, have you?" They answered him, "No." He said to them, "Cast the net to the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in, because there were so many fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and jumped into the sea. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, only about 100 yards off. When they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there, and fish on it, and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore, full of large fish, 153 of them. And though there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now none of the disciples dare ask him, "Who are you?" because they knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." He said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, "Follow me." Peter turned and saw the other disciple whom Jesus loved following them. He was the one who had reclined next to Jesus at the supper and said, "Lord, who is it that is going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, "Lord, what about him?" Jesus said to him, "If it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? Follow me." So the rumor spread in the community that this disciple would not die. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he would not die, but, "If it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you?"
The Gospel of Christ. So who here is tired of the pandemic? Of living with the uncertainty about the future? Will there be another variant? If so, how bad might it be? When will things get back to normal? What might that normal look like? I can relate. I'm tired of things being on hold and waiting for something, but not really sure what that something is. I think of it as living in the between time. Something has ended, but the next thing hasn't quite started yet. And that new thing is still undefined, and it's kind of hard to imagine. So how do I wait patiently and with hope for a future that I can't imagine? The people in our readings today also seem to be living in something of a between time. They're waiting for something new, but they're not too sure what that new thing will turn out to be. In our first reading is Saul, whose name was later changed to Paul after he converted. And he's the one responsible for founding the churches throughout the Eastern Mediterranean and then writing letters to them. And those letters have become a good number of books in the New Testament. But this is the account of Saul's conversion to Paul. He had been a staunch young Pharisee in Jerusalem. And he ruthlessly persecuted the followers of Jesus when the movement started to expand so quickly after Pentecost. He was rounding up followers of the way and tossing them, both men and women, into prison. He was so successful that he went to the high priest and asked for permission to go to Damascus in Syria, about 200 kilometers north, to do the same thing, to find believers in Jesus and round them up, bind them, and bring them back to Jerusalem for trial. So here we find Saul and his companions on the road getting close to Damascus. And suddenly a bright light shines out of nowhere. Saul falls to the ground, and he hears a voice calling his name. "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" So naturally, he's like, "Well, who are you?" And the answer comes, "I am Jesus." Now, I would love to know what the first thought into Paul's mind was after that. And I think it would be something like, "Oh, darn. I am in trouble now." It might have been, "How can that be? How could I be so wrong?" But it's like Jesus knew Paul's mind was racing, and he's like, "Just get up, go in the city, and you'll be told what to do." So the light and the voice disappear, and Saul finds he is blind. His companions need to lead him by the hand into the city. And he sits alone in the dark, not eating or drinking for 3 days. Now, what might he have been thinking during those 3 days? I imagine he was reviewing everything he knew about his scriptures and about prophecies about the Messiah, and trying to figure out, how can Jesus be the one we were waiting for and I missed it? He also might have been wondering, okay, now what? He was a rabbi. He made a living studying and teaching the scriptures, and now he's blind. He can't go back to doing his regular day job. We can move really quickly on to, oh yeah, but we know after 3 days he's healed, he gets his sight, he gets baptized, and, you know, goes on to be this great apostle. He didn't know that at the time. So for 3 days he's sitting in the dark, wondering, okay, something's done. I don't know what the next thing is. So he's living in that between time. In our gospel reading, some of the disciples of Jesus are in Galilee, and Peter's with them, and Peter says, "I'm going fishing." And it's like the others are scrambling over each other, going, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, yeah, we're going with you." Like, why fishing? Were they tired of waiting for Jesus to turn up? Maybe they just needed to be doing something while they waited. Peter was a man of action, after all. Maybe he needed to distract himself while his brain tried to process everything that had gone on in the last few weeks. If you think about it, the triumphal entry into Jerusalem would have been a high point. And then there was some tension teaching in the temple with the religious authorities, and then the intimacy of the Last Supper, and then the fear of the arrest, and maybe they were next, and then the horror of Jesus' crucifixion, and the grief at his death, and then these women show up saying the tomb's empty, like, what's that supposed to mean? And then Jesus shows up in their midst, and the joy they would have felt at that. He had gone through this roller coaster, all of them had, for the last few weeks. Now, their life literally following Jesus around the country teaching, that seemed to be over. Jesus wasn't hanging around like he did before. But what came next? Were they just supposed to go back to what they were doing when Jesus called them? In which case, yeah, Peter, go fishing. They were definitely living in a between time, between the resurrection and Pentecost, where they figured out what they were supposed to be doing. But whatever took them out on the water that night, Jesus knew where to find them. They fish all night and catch nothing. Then at dawn, there's this guy on the shore, and he tells them to put the net down on the other side of the boat. This is not an uncommon thing, apparently. There's something about the Sea of Galilee, and it is a relatively shallow lake, where somebody on shore can see the shoals of the schools of fish, where somebody on a boat right on top of them can't see them. So for someone to call out and say, oh, they're on the other side of the boat, put your net down there, that was not unusual. And they're going, oh, okay, well, sure, we'll try. And then all of a sudden, they pull up this overflowing net of fish. It was the disciple whom Jesus loved that recognized the guy on the shore was Jesus. Now, would he have recognized him by his appearance? The text says they were 100 yards away. I don't know. I don't know whether you can actually like see someone's features at 100 yards. But I think this disciple noticed the size of the catch. And he went, ha-ha, Jesus has to be involved in this. That's him on the shore. It's got to be. He knew Jesus was near. And sure enough, on shore, they find Jesus has this little fire going, and he's got some bread and fish grilling, and he invites them to breakfast. They bring some fish and clean them and stick them on the grill. After a night of fishing, they would have been tired, and they would have been hungry. Jesus invites them to rest and refresh themselves. It's like Jesus is quite prepared to just hang around with them. This isn't a great teaching session. He's just having breakfast. It's really an ordinary scene. Some guys on the shore of a lake fixing to have some breakfast. There's just one thing, as one of them used to be dead, which is definitely unusual. When the food is ready, Jesus takes the bread and gives it to them. He then does the same with the fish. Sound familiar? It reminds us, and would have reminded them, of that Last Supper in the upper room where Jesus took the bread and gave it to them and then took the wine and shared it among them. So Jesus is still acting as a servant to his disciples. The rest of the passage speaks about the restoration and recommissioning of Peter. It's a well-known story, and there's been lots of sermons preached on it, and I'm not going there. But I do want to call your attention to the last verse after that exchange. So Jesus has reinstated Peter and cryptically said that he will be martyred at an old age. And then Peter, in Peter's characteristic style, turns around and sees this other disciple following them along the beach. And this is the disciple whom Jesus loved. And Peter says, well, what about him? And Jesus tells them it's none of his business. He says, if it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? Follow me. Then we come to verse 23. So the rumor spread in the community that this disciple would not die. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he would not die, but if it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? It's kind of a weird thing to stick in a gospel account. As a matter of fact, this whole chapter is kind of weird, and we read most of it. This is how the chapter before it ends. Now, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that through believing you may have life in his name. That sounds like a conclusion to me. That sounds like a summary of this is what I wrote and why I wrote it. And then all of a sudden we've got this another chapter, chapter 21. It's like an appendix or an epilogue or something. The suggestion is that the author of the book, whom we learn in the little piece we didn't read, that it's the disciple whom Jesus loved. And they're talking about, he's the dude they thought wouldn't die. And the thinking is, this disciple has recently died. And that would have caused a crisis of faith for some in the community that this disciple led. They had been led to believe that Jesus would come back before this disciple died. And now he's dead and Jesus isn't back. So, like, was Jesus lying? Was he, maybe he's not reliable. Maybe this whole faith thing is just a hoax that somebody made up. It's being suggested that someone close to the author, maybe one of his own disciples, wrote this final chapter after the disciple's death to clear up this issue. Jesus had not said that the author wouldn't die, but only if he wanted it, he wouldn't die. I read somewhere that Jesus' statement can be compared to an exasperated mother saying to one child, if I asked your brother to go to the moon, what is it to you? I asked you to clean your room, so just do it. So it's hyperbole to make a point. Somehow, Jesus' words got misinterpreted, and then it created a crisis in the faith. So folks in that community now had to realize that they were living in this between time, between Jesus' resurrection and ascension, and then Jesus' second coming. They thought they knew when that second coming was, going to be in the lifetime of this guy, their leader. And now this guy's dead. So all of a sudden they're going, ooh, we don't know when it's going to be. They were coming to terms with the fact that Jesus' coming is promised, but the time is up in the air. We too live in that same between time, between Jesus' resurrection and ascension and his return. 2,000 years of this between time has already happened. We have no idea when things might come to a conclusion, but we wait, and we watch, and we hope. In this between time, how do we encounter the risen Christ? Paul had this spectacular experience. A bright light from heaven, a voice from nowhere. Is that how we encounter Jesus today? Maybe some, certainly not me. Probably not any of you. But if so, I want to hear about it, okay? I don't think spectacular is the norm. Perhaps Paul was so caught up in his own agenda that Jesus needed to do something spectacular just to get his attention. In our gospel reading, we see the other disciples didn't need anything spectacular to recognize their risen Lord. That scene on the beach would not have looked odd to anybody walking by. It is in his actions that Jesus is recognized by that one disciple. The disciple whom Jesus loved is a phrase that runs through the gospel according to John. We learn at the end that that's who actually wrote the gospel. This disciple was deeply aware that Jesus loved him. And I would venture to say that this disciple deeply loved Jesus in return. It's interesting that in the Bible, and in Hebrew actually, seminary is good for something, the word to love is the same as the word to know. So I think this disciple knew that Jesus knew everything about him and loved him anyway. And he loved Jesus just for that reason, for that acceptance. It was like this disciple was tuned in to Jesus. His spiritual antenna, as it were, picked up quickly that the guy on the shore was Jesus, just from the fact they caught a boatload of fish. And I think this is how Jesus comes to us today, most of the time, in a rather ordinary way. If we are attuned to Jesus, we will pick up his presence by what happens around us. Not because it's spectacular, but maybe because of its timing or its magnitude. Something that someone else might write off as nothing. Or they go, oh, it's just coincidence. Jesus had a charcoal fire burning. He didn't call down fire from heaven like an Old Testament prophet. It was an ordinary campfire. He didn't multiply the bread and fish like he did at the feeding of the 5,000. It was just ordinary bread and fish they'd caught. What is special is that Jesus served them like he did at the Last Supper. Jesus was not all that different now, even after all he had been through. He was still there, Jesus. And so it is for us. Jesus still works on our behalf to serve us. It may not be how we particularly want to be served, but it is in our best interest. Do we need rest and refreshment like the disciples? Do we need direction? I think these disciples wanted some kind of specific direction of what the heck happens now. All they got was follow me. Maybe that was just Peter. I think maybe it wasn't the time for more. They needed time and rest, and that's what Jesus was giving them. Jesus promised to be with them, and then on Pentecost, we read, things set off with a rush. But until then, the disciples waited. Even Saul, at the time we left him in the reading, he's waiting. It's all he can do. We now are in a between time, between the raging waves of the pandemic and whatever it is that's going to come afterwards. And we don't know what that after might look like or when it will arrive, and we might not even know it's here until we've actually been living in it for a few months. All we can do is wait. But we know Jesus knows where to find us. He's ready to serve our best interests. And he comes to us in ordinary ways, perhaps through the efforts of another, one of us here, maybe listening to us when we need to unload, or encouraging us to be patient. In the meantime, we can wait. The disciples did it. Paul did it. And the risen Christ revealed himself in the ways that each of them needed. What are our spiritual antennae tuned to? Are we expecting to encounter the risen Christ? Are we watchful? Are we expecting? Let us wait with hope and patience to see Jesus working in our midst, even today. Amen.